SBC Media.
Welcome to the iGaming Daily Podcast, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market.
Good afternoon and welcome to a very special Friday edition of the iGaming Daily Podcast. I'm joined by Ted Orme-Clay and Kieran O'Connor from the Payment Expert and Insider Sport team. And we're going to discuss a host of subjects today, from the Euros to open banking to Ted's attendance at the Pay360 conference in London. We're going to get some insight from the exhibition floor and find out what's going on. But first, a message from our sponsor, Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. 56% of the EGR Power 50 personalized player experiences with Optimove. And as a special offer, Optimove are offering new clients a free first month when they buy Optimove. For more information and to claim the free month, go to optimove.com/SBC. And of course, links will also be left in the podcast description. Okay, Ted, thanks for joining us. Fresh back from London at the Pay360 conference at the XL this year, I believe. A little scale up on previous years, continuously growing, showing the appetite for payments in the UK and in London, and for payment conferences as well. And just a general buzz about fintech in the UK, I would say. Yeah, firstly, how did you find the conference? How was London?
Yeah, thanks for the intro, Joe. Obviously, yeah, I'm back in sunny Manchester from a couple of days down in the big smoke, as people say. I think people still say. And yeah, as you said, attended the Pay360 conference at the XL. It's the second time this year at the XL after ICE, of course. They can't keep me away. Yeah, it was a really solid event held by the Payments Association. Had some really high profile speakers there from, you know, some big banks, from the likes of NatWest, Lloyds, HSBC, some of the more like fintech side of things, and obviously payments and sort of card side of things, MasterCard, Visa, Monzo, people from PayPal, regulators are obviously represented there, policymakers, legislators in the form of a couple of MPs as well. And yeah, just overall provided a really interesting snapshot into kind of the ongoing payments trends that are defining the sector, both the payments sector, but also sort of fintech and finance at large. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about, as you'd expect, things like artificial intelligence. There's a lot of buzz around that. People are very, seem to be very excited about what this technology is going to do for finance and the economy at large. It seems to, I think a lot of people are very confident in its abilities as a growth driver. Open banking was, of course, another area, but I think we're going to get onto that later. And yeah, I was able to speak to quite a few interesting people from across the sector, including at one point I managed to have a few words with Dr. Lisa Cameron MP, who's part of the all-party parliamentary group on cryptocurrencies and digital assets. Payment Expert was quite lucky to be a media partner, so thank you to the Payment Association for that. And overall just a solid experience, solid couple of days down in the capital.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting, and I think particularly at a time when you know, when we are enduring economic strain and, it, you know, inflation is, you know, it's creeping up again. And it's really important to get all the stakeholders from such an important sector all together, and policymakers as well, like you spoke to there, all together in the same room discussing a topic as important as payments. And I guess it appears we're very likely to have a governmental change. A foremost priority for this government has always been fintech, right? But it will be interesting to see if it remains top of the agenda, and if, you know, digital currencies as well remain high on the agenda. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if fintech remains high on the agenda for potential Keir Starmer Labour government. I guess we have to wait for the manifestos to see.
Yeah, the obviously we know it's very clear what the government, what the Conservative government want in this area. They've made investment in tech in general quite a sort of big priority. Jeremy Hunt mentioned that in the last two budgets, didn't he? But Labour have been a bit more vocal. They've been getting a bit clearer on what they'd like to focus on. There was a policy document published a couple of months ago Obviously, I think that would have been headed up by Rachel Reeves, who's Labour's shadow secretary, shadow chancellor of the Exchequer, excuse me. And they talked a lot in there about, again, two of the big sort of talking points I've got here of artificial intelligence and open banking. So it seems that Labour are putting, they're similar to the Conservatives, are putting a bit of an emphasis on sort of fintech and finance as a growth driver in the British economy. Obviously, if you get down to the intricacies of it, there will be some more differences between them because of the ideological differences between the two parties. But it seems that both are valuing the sector quite heavily.
Yeah, it does. I was looking at that not that long back, the report from Rachel Reeves, and yeah, it does seem like they're going to focus on tech and on AI, and there will be a continued focus on fintech. And the UK currently, you know, we're in a strong position in terms of open banking adoption, and you know how well we do with open banking engagement. Not quite as much as Scandinavia or the Nordics, that type of region. I think they're a little bit ahead of us. But yeah, some of the keynotes were also about this, right? About the UK retaining its position on open banking.
Yeah, so with regards to this, retaining the position sort of thing, it's interesting what you said there about the UK standing. So we had John Penrose, MP, who's an MP for Western Supermare, I believe, also a Conservative. And he had a bit of a slightly different, I think, view to what you just laid out there. He seemed to be very, very confident that the UK is like the global leader in open banking.
Global leader,
so
wow.
Open banking adoption. At least from what I got from his keynote. But he did note that there are other countries that are pursuing that top spot as well. I think he highlighted Australia and India as being two big markets.
Interesting.
Where
interesting.
There's a lot of development. I think Australia in particular, I think he noted that we had taken the spot from them at one point. So I think he was very, very opinionated on the fact that the UK needs to take some big actions to retain this top spot. One of those was interoperability, like making sure that open banking can fit across different sectors. Obviously, various different economic sectors, different business sectors have their own requirements, don't they? They have their own infrastructure, their own networks, their own needs.
Interoperability. So, yeah, just break that down into simpler terms for us.
Basically, just ensuring that open banking as a sort of practice and as a technology can be applied across different sectors without, as he put it quite interestingly, I think, without the need to have to like reinvent the wheel every time it's taken onto a new sector. You know what I mean? So you're taking it from the typical sort of functions like finance and banking to apply it maybe to its uses in healthcare, to its uses in energy.
Yeah.
And things like you need to, I guess, a good way of saying it would be to make sure that it's a fluid practice.
That's perfect, I guess. Yeah. That's really interesting. Interoperability. I'm going to have a hard time with that one for weeks, I think. And yeah, I thought he was a striker that Man United tried to sign a few years ago, if I'm honest with you. But that's really interesting. And interesting to hear that the next steps for open banking as well, and how the UK can retain its status as what he calls the leader. I'm going to say a leader for now, because I think that's quite a competitive pool. But I think this is very relevant to the gambling industry, because as we've seen with new affordability checks and, you know, stake limits and, you know, checks becoming more stringent and strict, open banking can play a role in this, and it can play a role in ensuring that the customer journey, which interestingly enough, one of the other keynotes at Pay360 from your reporting, what I read, was praising the customer journey in payments in the UK, praising the journey that we have. If we're to have this, open banking is to play a role and to break down the barriers and to be able to, you know, ensure that operators can create a financial picture of their customer through the tech involved in open banking. So the UK retaining a status as an open banking leader is really key to the UK's gambling sector. And I think what will fuel this is mass adoption, you know, growing adoption to a new level. There were some updates, Kieran, right, on the where we're at with the white paper.
On the Gambling Act Review.
Yeah, on the Gambling
Act
Review.
Yeah, so David Taylor, who's the head of Evidence Assurance and Evaluation at the UK Gambling Commission, had some interesting comments. I think it was Casino Beach, your own publication, that published this, Joe. Taylor sort of emphasised the need for continually sort of monitor review to truly sort of evaluate the measures. Obviously, it's completely new. They don't know what's going to happen. They need to keep on top of it. They've obviously got sort of things that they want to get out from it. So they need to sort of track and see if they're on the right lines. They also need to look out for unintended consequences, I think he put it. So this could be anything. It could be could have some significance to payment elements, I suppose, with the affordability checks, which I don't think we've mentioned, but I think the affordability checks is probably one of the biggest sort of milestones or sort of features that the open banking can improve in gambling.
Yeah, and if those affordability checks are too stringent, they're too heavy-handed, you know, you're asking for a lot from a customer or from a player that they just don't want to give over because, you know, you don't want to give over bank statements and your mortgage statement, whatever details they're asking, you're going to end up with a surge in the black market, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not really our place. Everyone's got their own preferences, I suppose, or opinions if you wanted to give that over. But obviously the big push in recent years with like safer gambling and practicing safer gambling, I think you will sort of see these real stringent measures come into play.
Yeah.
And like you said, it will be the government's approach and people like the Gambling Commission to sort of tackle the black market as a separate entity and really encourage people to practice safe gambling if that is giving across bank statements or mortgage statements.
Yeah, and if open banking can play a role, in, you know, ensuring that these checks are as sort of fluid and as efficient as possible, that's only a good thing, right?
Yeah, because it's all about the data, isn't it? I think that's the main thing, isn't it? It's about using open banking to sort of easily share data and gain a better view of the customer, isn't it?
Yeah, a deeper view of the customer, a more expanded view.
And I think for the reasons that Kieran's just mentioned, I think the gambling sector should definitely pay very close attention to where development of open banking goes in the UK and how the recommendations of the Future of Payments Review as well, with Joe Garner was at Pay360, he wrote that and he spoke about that. They should be paying as much attention to that as they are to the Gambling Act Review recommendations as well, I think, yeah.
Was there we've sort of spoke about how relevant, how pertinent the discussion around this type of payment tech is to gambling. Was there a strong gambling presence at Pay360? Apart from yourself, of course.
not overall, no, not from myself. It was predominantly, obviously, payments and banking focused. Yep. I think on some of the panels were a couple of people with interest in the sector. I think one of the main ones was there was a speaker from Flutter International on one of the panels. Wow. Unfortunately, I had a meeting clash, so I wasn't able to attend that one. But there was also, on one of the panels I went to, a speaker from YOLO Group, it was obviously they've got interests in both sort of cryptocurrency and in gambling, were on there, but he was predominantly talking about the adoption of cryptocurrency and where we see that going in the UK as well. He shared the stage with Lisa Cameron MP, who obviously I mentioned earlier.
Really, really interesting, Ted, and it sounds like a good trip. It's going to be fascinating to see how the payment industry continues to evolve and whether they can take that adoption of open banking to a new level. And that's all for part one. And in part two, we're going to discuss, we're going to touch on the Euros and the international break that looms on the horizon.
SBC Leaders connects the gambling industry's top tier operators and associations to share the best ideas, collaborate on solving the biggest issues, and push innovation throughout the betting and gaming industry. If you're an operator and want to join the discussion, visit sbcleaders.com for more information.
Okay, and thanks once again for rejoining us. And but we are on an international break, but in terms of the football, you know, we're a very unique international break as the precursor to a big European Championship summer. But before we go into that and explore that, some big developments at Nottingham Forest and with Premier League regulations this week. Yeah, Kieran, I'll let you give us the insight on this. What's gone down, like what, and how does it affect the other clubs as well?
So pretty much the Premier League clubs have sort of voted. It's not been put in place, but this vote sort of means that they're looking to put it in place. I believe that they'll make an actual decision at the end of year review. So the new framework, as you may, the PSR new framework will be. That currently teams aren't allowed to lose more than 105 million over a 3-year stint. So this new framework will actually mean that teams will be able to spend up to 85% of their total revenues.
The current one is 105 million.
The current one is losing 105 million. You can't go over that.
Okay.
So I suppose this new framework looks more positive. It's not looking at your losses. It's looking at don't spend more than 85% of the revenues that you make.
Is there a danger that the gap then between bigger and the smaller clubs?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Manchester United and Manchester City, I think you had the biggest total revenue over last year. Obviously, there's questions around that. But if you look at Manchester United and City and Arsenal and Chelsea, their revenues are absolutely huge, the gap between them and the likes of, like, even Luton if they stay up.
Yeah.
Obviously, Luton, the likes of Luton and Forest, if they stay up, they would be able to spend more money than they currently are doing.
Yeah.
But they would have to somehow
pale in comparison to what the bigger clubs could spend. And so I guess the old framework, the 105 million framework, is the one that Forest
was penalised for. Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit more about those sanctions?
So they were docked 4 points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forest were docked 4 points for this. There's obviously some big issues around it. What Forest have, I mean, they've come out as a club and sort of said that we're going to get back at the Premier League and sort of try and get this fixed and get the points added back to them. Obviously, Forest aren't the first club this season to be docked points. Everton were docked points, and they appealed theirs and were successful.
They were successful. It went from 10 points.
Went from 10 to 6. Yeah. So now Forest are going to appeal their 4 points. They feel like they've been hard done by. One of the main reasons is this is because I think one of the biggest... So they spent a lot of money coming up from the Championship. And because of that, I think they have an argument there that how can clubs sort of expect to compete without spending this money?
So this is Forest, right?
This is Forest, yeah.
And also, Kieran, there was something about the Brennan Johnson factor, right? There was something around the Brennan Johnson transfer that they're saying is extenuating circumstances as to why.
Yeah, and that is a really fascinating point that they brought up in their appeal. So Brennan Johnson, for people who don't know, was an academy graduate striker, and he sort of played a crucial role at Forest because obviously if they sold him, the whole sale would contribute entirely to profit.
Yeah.
So they were already struggling with the financial fair play, so by selling him they would sort of, well, they would
he was
be
balancing the books,
yeah,
essentially,
balancing
yeah.
the books. With all that, it went on for ages. I think Atletico Madrid come in and offered 50 million euros for him, which is about 42 million pounds, but the club sort of come back and said we want more. Then I think despite another free offers from Brentford between July and August, Nottingham Forest came back again and turned them down. And then eventually Johnson was sold to Tottenham for around £47 million. But that was after the deadline that obviously the Premier League has set for FFP.
Yeah. So they could have been closer to the thing, but to the deadline and to the FFP limits.
Yeah.
But they would have got less for their academy graduate.
Yeah.
Which absolutely makes no sense. And before I bring you in here, Ted, for a 2 cents that Forrest could have really done with around the time of FFP, I'm going to asterisk it by saying that you are a Forrest fan. But yeah, you a little bit of insight on this as well from your perspective. Is there real angst? I guess that's a good question. How was the 4 points to you? What was your reaction to it? Did you feel it was better or worse than expected?
Yeah, I think, firstly with the 4 point deduction, I think we all knew there was one coming. There have been rumours about it for a long while, and over on Inside the Sport, we've been keeping an eye on that closely. And it's just been a topic of general sort of office discussion, hasn't it, when the football gets raised. We knew it was coming. Everton had already been, as we've said, dealt their points deduction for similar reasons. So it just stood to reason that the Premier League weren't going to make an exception to Forest. I think a lot of us are actually just more pleased that it was 4 and not more, because I was expecting it to be 6 to match Everton.
I will just add in that the Premier League did initially look to take away 8 points from Forest. on the basis that their breach was 77% larger than Everton's. So obviously Everton fans now looking at that must be thinking, how come they've got four?
Yeah, it's just before this podcast, actually, I was looking on, we're just doing a bit of background read on this and ended up coming across a Liverpool Echo article, which I think, as you'd imagine, was quite vocal about that. Yeah, the Forest, as a fan, I'll have to admit that, we breached it quite more significantly.
And it's interesting when we talk about the appeal, the appeal factor, Forest, when we talk about it, from a Forest perspective, like, are they going to appeal the 4 points? It's worth noting the Premier League could also appeal that decision and try and get it increased. So, yeah, it could go both ways. So I think, maybe Forest will settle on the 4 points. I don't know. But they do certainly have an interesting appeal case because of the Brennan Johnson situation and because they held out and they did eventually sell him to Spurs for more money. And he's been fantastic at Spurs, by the way, side point. But, yeah. It's going to be wild to see how it unfolds and to see who gets relegated off the back of it. And it also presents a really challenging situation for traders and anti-post traders. I don't know how they're dealing with it. There'll be a lot of people that backed Everton to go down, a lot of people that backed Luton to go down or Forest to go down or either back them to stay up. And now those odds are absolutely all over the place. And you're pricing based on, based on a whim of whether the FA make this decision or that decision or how it plays out. So, yeah, a really tricky one for trading rooms as well. And speaking of trading rooms, they are going to be buzzing in the summer when we have the European Championships in Germany. It's a good one. In Germany, there's going to be a great atmosphere. We've not got long left, but Ted, are you looking forward to the Euros? And how big of a betting opportunity is it? What do you think the big betting trends will be?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think everyone who follows football or just sport in general in the UK and throughout Europe is always looking forward to the Euros. Yeah, it's obviously outside of the World Cup is one of the biggest sporting events in the world. And by extension, obviously, is a huge betting event. It's a massive it's a massive few weeks for the bookies. It tends to bring in not just, the hardcore football fans, also like casual fans. People like to rally around their national teams a lot. We see that quite often. The typical sort of betting trend you can expect is going to be on, people backing the national teams, I think we'll see that throughout Europe. Goal scorer markets, who's going to be the top goal scorer of the tournament, things like that, that's always going to be a big one. People might be looking for upsets in there as well, betting against the favourites. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, England are bookies' favourite, aren't they? But we all know how England often end up going in international tournaments. So, maybe some people out there might be looking to make a few quid or make a few euros betting against us,
And it might be upset season in Germany as well, because obviously it looks highly likely that for the first time in about 10 years, somebody other than Bayern Munich is going to win the title. So they are very accustomed to the upset now, where the tournament is going to be. And yeah, I guess that that creates an interesting dynamic as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. Another big thing in the Euros that I saw was the Netherlands team. I think it's the first time in like 30 years they haven't had any Ajax players in their squad.
Wow.
So, the international landscape for teams is really shaping up to be an interesting one at this next Euro tournament. A big one for me was looking at the odds. I think they're like 8-1 on Bet365 or something like that. So yeah. I think they're definitely one for people maybe to sort of back as like maybe a finalist or something like that.
No, 100%. And it might be, maybe Ronaldo will eke out one more tournament as well. And yeah, I've got to say the England team looks phenomenal too. It does on paper. There's a reason that England are favourites because what a team. And in terms of trends, I'm really predicting the player props will go mad this tournament. I think we'll see some really unique player props throughout the tournament. And also, I think we'll see a nice, as the European market is so competitive. I think we'll see some nice free-to-play games that really draw in bettors and get some unique engagement. We've seen them grow in terms of free-to-play innovation in recent years. And I think the Euros will provide a stage for some of the best free-to-play games over a tournament span. Obviously, it has to be different because, you know, you're not doing it over 38 weeks. You're doing it over a tournament. But I do think we'll see some cool free-to-play initiatives. Yeah, I think that I think that wraps us up. And Kieran, Ted, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for providing your unique and unbiased insight on Nottingham Forest's maybe relegation sentence that has been hit upon them with the financial charges. But yeah, and also from the floor from a fascinating Pay 360 as well. Some really good insight. And do your best to enjoy the international break this weekend. It's not Premier League, but it should be fun.
Thank you for listening to today's iGaming Daily Podcast, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.